Be a lot cooler if you did. Let's
all right, let's corral everybody. All right, we're going to do a two-minute meditation, and then I'm going to lead everybody in your prayers, so just repeat after me. And the 2 minutes starts now. Great observer, we acknowledge your presence here in this room. We ask that you guide and direct us. Please set aside. Everything we think we know. About step 10. About step 11. So we can have an open mind. And a new experience. Help us see the truth. Amen.
So this one's called practice. Spiritual success is gained by daily cultivation. If you practice for the day, then you have won. If you were lazy for the day, then you have lost. Self-cultivation is the heart of spiritual attainment. Gaining insight and ability is not a matter of grand statements, dramatic initiations, or sporadic moments of enlightenment. Those things are only highlights in a life of consistent activity. Whatever system of spirituality you practice, do it every day. If it is prayer, then pray every day. If it is meditation, then meditate every day. If it is exercise, then exercise every day. Only then will you be able to say that you are truly practicing spirituality. This methodical approach is reassuring in several ways. First, it provides you with a process and a means to maintain progress, even if that particular day is not inspiring or significant. Just to practice is already good. Secondly, it gives you a certain faith. If you practice every day, it is inevitable that you will gain from it. Thirdly, constant practice gives you a certain satisfaction. How can you say to yourself that you have truly entered a spiritual path unless you can look back on years of daily practice and take comfort in the momentum that it has given you?
Thanks, Brandon. Is Chris in here? If Chris's talk did not resonate with you, then you're probably not done. It touched me deeply. It was a wonderful testimony. I think I'm going to title the talk, do you have an agency for God? It just doesn't get better than that. It's miraculous what I, 'cause I saw, you know, I've known Chris for a while, and that transformation, it's proof positive of the regenerative power of God, the universe, the great observer, the great reality, the spiritual realm. If you guys have noticed, we've been using different words for God. So many of us hear the word God, and all of a sudden our mind is flooded. And it's typically with an association we've made that Chris touched on, which is it's not really resentful of God. We're resentful of people that happen to be individuals that claim to be God-centered that we've run into over our lives, and we've equated our experiences with them to experiences with this power called God. And it blocks us from having any type of new experience or developing any new ideas. So what one of our themes this whole weekend has been, relax your ideas, investigate, and move past them. You either take them with you, or you develop new ideas to take with you and move forward. I've said it over and over this weekend, spirituality is not something outside of life. It's not ethereal. It's not unicorns and rainbows. It's embedded in the daily existence of life. And that's what these next two steps are. So the first nine steps, the way my late grand sponsor used to describe them, are the launching pad into the world of the spirit. And that's the 10th step and 11th step. Now, there's new language that's required for the 10th and 11th step. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning. One of my mentors introduced me to his mentor and that I've been listening to. And he talks about human development. To me, the spiritual path is about getting to a place that perhaps one day in this body I'll be what's called a complete human. Don't know if that's going to happen, but that's what I'm going for. So what do I mean by that? So there's phases of development, the first of which is self-survival. We're power-driven, instinctive, and unthinking. Sounds like how we exist in our addiction, doesn't it? The next phase is the blaming sense of self. And it's not, I don't mean blame in a negative way. When I say blame, we begin to develop a conscience. I think that happens in early recovery. Right? This little slivers of a conscience begins to develop. The next phase is an inspired sense of self, open to intuition and creative exploration. This is where these two steps start to come in. And then the next phase is tranquility, confident of one's own insight. And I've learned more about that from this man sitting to my right than anyone else. It's called trusting your intuition. It's called following your sixth sense. And some of us call it God consciousness, and so does the big book. And the last phase of the development being self-actualization, becoming a complete human being connected to the forces that brought being into being. So when I listened to him and I took these notes, it really made sense of lining this up with the steps. And the steps we're talking about this morning, 10 and 11, that's what they're about, creative exploration and intuition. Because Chris touched on it, and before I get into the mechanics of a 10th step and how we develop the sixth sense, I want to read something. And this is by the same teacher. My mentor and his mentor and his mentor's mentor took an inventory of their lives, living a spiritual life. And this is what they came up with. There is no reason for you to live the life we have lived. At the same time, it is important for you to know, or for me to know, that we have lived this particular spiritual path in a specific way. And this has led me to where I am, for better or for worse. If you want to live the path I have lived or walk the path that I have walked, this is what mine looked like. To begin with, you must be deeply compelled, without adequate reason, to seek and find the sublime. You must be desperate enough. You must know what it means to have patience, fortitude, and endurance. You must know what it means to have been broken. You must know what it means to lose what you love more than once, and to experience real heartbreak, and to discover that the heart, though seemingly broken and irreparable, mends. You must know what it means to be orphaned, literally or figuratively. You must know what it means to experience crippling disease or illness. You must know what it means to be literally hungry.
You must know what it means to be assaulted by violence. You must know what it means to be oppressed. You must know what it means to come close to physical death. You must know what it is like to be a wage slave and work at meaningless jobs. You must know the humiliation of being a prostitute, either literally or figuratively. You must know the rawness of pure animal sexuality and lust, but without totally objectifying the other person. You must know what it means to experience deep panic and fear as well as depression. You must know what it means to come close to losing your mind. You must come to know what it is to be deeply sane. You must know what it means to be alienated and crave human warmth when and where there is none to be found. You must learn how to recognize love when it is given to you and yield to it. You must learn to give love freely and then withdraw it when necessary. You must know what it means to be a parent, and you must know what it feels like to lose your child. You must know what it feels like to be deeply betrayed by those whom you trust so closely. You must know what it is like to be unfairly dishonored and defamed. You must learn how you can produce something of real value for others. You must learn how to come to love your profession or craft, and then you must experience how it fails you. You must know how to mix with people of wealth and power, as well as mixing with the powerless and the penniless, and you must learn to do so with equanimity. You must know what it means to be a laborer working with your hands. You must learn about what constitutes real beauty. You must know how to pursue knowledge for its own sake, accepting the truth as it presents itself. You must come to face the deepest hypocrisy in yourself as well as others. You must experience at least a modicum of fame and not become entranced with it. You must also know how to adapt and speak to others on their own terms. You must learn to experience the depths of anger, rage, bitterness, and cynicism. You must learn to transcend the deadening limits of your own quiet despair. You must learn the difference between conventional moralities and real ethics. You must learn to see humanity as it is, without varnishing it, and yet still love the simplest humanity as it displays itself to you in its innocence. You must learn to live without resentment, yet without forgetting. You must learn how to give and to demand reciprocation. You must learn how to discriminate between those who can understand and those who cannot, or more importantly, those who will not understand out of willful ignorance. You must know what it is like to lose all trust and hope and find a different form of faith. The first time this was presented to me, I sat with it in my morning 11th step for several days, and realizing how much of that has taken place in my own life. And, you know, one of the things I have mentioned throughout the course of this weekend is that, you know, the spiritual life does not have to be other world. It's not another world. It's here, right here in our day-to-day life, in our existence. But what's required here is self-reflection. You have to reflect. And so step 10 is this wonderful step that has nothing to do with writing inventory. The short form of the steps, as we continue to take personal inventory, we're wrong, promptly admitted it. And I can't tell you the number of times over 10 and a half years I've been to a 10-step meeting, and that's all they want to talk about, admitting when they're wrong. And I get that's part of it. And then they talk about writing inventory. I'm doing my 10-step every night. I want to know what the hell you're doing during the day. Because that's when I interact with all God's kids, right? You know, so the 10-step to me is this ability to go to this place within, this still, quiet place, and bring that out into all my activities. You know, we hear about 10, 11, and 12 being maintenance steps. There's nothing, we're not people that do well maintaining shit. Right? These steps are about growing. They're growth steps. It says our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. I believe that means understanding the spiritual realm and effectiveness in the human realm. And then integrating the two. And so the book says, We continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we clean up our past, as we're making amends. We've entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It's going to continue for our lifetime. So here we go. The first, like when I'm sponsoring people through the 12 steps, when we get to the 10th step, I sort of teach them the 10th and 11th at the same time. And I've already had them in the 11th step since the very beginning. When I meet with guys I sponsor, we sit down and pray and meditate most of the time. That's the first thing we're going to do. I want to introduce them to it. And that's my part, as my responsibility as a sponsor is to spoon feed the men I sponsor the program of recovery, part of which is prayer and meditation. So they're going to meditate with me and they're going to pray with me. That's part of it. I want to get them into these practices so they can start to integrate them into their day-to-day lives. So the first, when we get to step 10, I'm going to say, get a bunch of 3x5 cards, and I want you to write the word watch. That's all you're going to write. You're going to write, you know, put one in your pocket, one's going on your nightstand, one's going on the mirror in the bathroom, one's going on the dashboard in your car. If you have an office or a workstation, you're going to put a 3x5 card there. And I just want you to watch for 1 week. That's all we're going to do is watch. Well, what are we watching for? You're watching your internal condition. You're watching for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And you're just trying to become a guardian of your inner space and see how the world and the people, how you interact with it and what effect it has on you, because the environment has a direct impact on you. Okay? So that's the first spiritual discipline. Watch. The next is going to be ask. The big book says we ask at once that God remove it. So now you're incorporating the 10th and the 11th step, so to speak, but it's inside of your 10th step, so you need to start a dialogue. So the next week, they get a new batch of 3x5 cards. Now the cards all say watch and ask, and that's all I want you to do in for a week. I want you watching and communicating with your higher power. That's how we start to cultivate a personal relationship with God. And so a question you should ask yourself, you get up in the morning, you do your 2 to 3 minutes of prayer and meditation, or however long you're doing it, what are you doing the rest of the day to cultivate this relationship? You know, what would happen if I was in a relationship and I gave my partner 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes in the evening and that was it? It wouldn't be a very good relationship. Watch and ask. Then they come back to me. I give them the next section. Well, when these crop up, and they always will, we ask God at once to remove them. There's this thing that I hold off on. It says we discuss with someone immediately and we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. That happens. But when, as far as the note cards, I go to the next practice. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. I want to teach God reliance. I don't want them depending on me as a sponsor. I don't want them depending on people in their network. So we're going to do watch and ask for the first week watch, second week watch, ask. Third week is watch, ask, and turn. All right, so now what we're doing is we're watching. Something crops up. We communicate with God. And then we turn back to what we're doing. Turn back to the work. Turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Maybe I should call my sponsees and see how they're doing. All right, maybe I need to call a buddy of mine in the network and see what he's doing. Right, turn. God reliance. It says we turn our thoughts to someone we can help. We practice a code of love and tolerance. So I'm talking to them about the code. That's a code. That's an ongoing principle to live by. Love and tolerance. Next paragraph, we cease fighting anything or anyone. This is the fourth. Fourth week, first week watch, second week watch ask, third week watch ask turn. Fourth week, new note cards, watch ask turn, cease fighting. Chris said it, all suffering is resistance to what is. Stop fighting. Fourth week, once they practice that, that's the practice, and when that fails, then you discuss it with someone immediately. It's the last course of action. We want to learn how to depend on the higher power because that is the presence that's with us the entire time. That's why this practice is the hardest. The 10th step is by far the hardest step to practice. But what you can do with it is limitless. This is how I stay awake. This is how I reflect as I'm moving through my day. This is an amazing step to incorporate into your life. And very few people talk about it the way I just described it. And then there's other wonderful practices in the 10th step. Practicing a position of neutrality. Right? Chris read some of the 10th step promises, but the parts that fascinate me is we recoil as if from a hot flame. That to me is incredible. You know, I was I had a guy that I was taking to the doctor a couple weeks ago, and we're driving through North Avenue and Boulevard, which is where I used to hang out, and I'm having all these flashbacks of getting high down there. And all I had to do was take a deep breath and center myself, and this power protects me that quickly. Right? It protects me. I don't have to say a prayer. I just need to take a deep breath, because the breath is God. When I acknowledge my breath, I acknowledge God, or the great observer, or the great reality, or the spiritual realm within. Whatever your word is, it's fine. But it can be that tangible and that accessible. It says that we react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We'll see that our new attitude towards drugs and alcohol has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. The thought and effort through the whole process has not been avoiding temptation or staying sober and clean one miserable day at a time. It's been working the 12 steps. Working the 12 steps. That's where the thought and effort is. That's the miracle of it. I don't fight it. I'm not avoiding temptation. I feel as though I've been placed in a position of neutrality. If it was about avoiding temptation, I was married to a woman who became the director of human resources at Sweetwater Brewery. I mean, my house was slammed full of alcohol. She had a vape pen that she used from time to time. She would, you know, if we went out and went to concerts, every now and then she'd dabble in some Molly. Wait, hold on a second. I'm supposed to be avoiding temptation, right? No. It says
people, places, and things, Tarek.
Oh, yeah. People, places, and things. I'm so blessed that I didn't have teachers that taught that crazy shit. They taught me freedom. And I was free the entire time. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We haven't even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. Here's the problem. Being removed is I no longer have an illusion that I ever had a choice. That's what's been removed. Illusion of choice. It's gone. That's the thing that kept me in active addiction for so many years, is the illusion that I still had a choice. It's gone. It's been eradicated. It doesn't exist for me. I'm not cocky. I'm not afraid. This is my experience. This is how I'm going to react so long as I keep in fit spiritual condition. You will relapse for one reason and one reason alone. You're not in fit spiritual condition. End of story. And getting into a recovery program and going to church on Sunday for us is not fit spiritual condition. It actually requires that we do some stuff. It's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on my past accomplishments. I'm headed for trouble if I do, because for me, crack cocaine is a subtle foe. I'm not cured of my addiction. I repeat, I'm not cured of my addiction, but I've recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and I've been given the power to help others. What I really have is a daily stay of execution, contingent on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. Every day, here's another 10-step practice that is overlooked. Every day is a day when I must carry a vision of God's will into all my activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. Vision work. Create a vision of what it's like to walk with your Creator. If He's observing you, or she's observing you, or it is observing you and walking with you, does that affect how you engage life? Much has already been said about receiving strength and inspiration and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense her spirit, His spirit, the Spirit flows into us. To some extent, we've become God conscious. We've begun to develop this vital sixth sense. In the back of the book, most of us believe that the essence of spiritual experience is simply the awareness of a power greater than ourselves. That's the essence of the spiritual experience. That's all we're going for here. We want to think about God as often as possible. And the miraculous thing in that practice, there'll be times when all of a sudden God starts thinking about you. And you're going to think, what the hell did he just say? Yes, the consciousness of your belief shows up without you making a conscious decision to do it. And that's a really magical... magical experience. I don't have a better word to use.
It is magical. Both and.
Yes. This is the tenth step. And it's new language. What I just described to you. If the first nine steps, if we're walking up these steps and there's a door at the top and the first nine steps open the door, they crack the door. But I can't go in the room and engage what's in the room unless I learn a 10th step and an 11th step. Okay? Very, very important that you guys understand this. This is what makes recovery exciting. This is what makes it fun. This sentence here that Brandon's going to get into, that we're going to get into, is the door that opens up. Be quick to see where religious people are right. Make use of what they offer. We probably have, I think, five or six religions represented up here in our books.
At least.
That's freedom. That's fun. Don't get it boxed in. Right? The reason we got high for so long is we were looking for something. We were seekers. That's why. One of the reasons why. And we found something in drugs and alcohol. Otherwise, they would never have done so much to us. You got to find something here, or at least find the desire to continuously seek something you may never find. So, with that being said, there's these eight things that I live by. They're just as important as the 12 steps, and I want to share them, and then I'm going to tell a quick story and hand it over to Brandon for the second half. The first is protection. Protect your personal recovery. Protect your relationship with God. And what I mean by that is it has to be the most important thing in your life, or everything that you care about is going to disappear. I lost a marriage in part behind this because my recovery was more important than my wife and my daughter. And I began to just make stupid decisions that were combined with being in a relationship with someone that's not in recovery. And it was really difficult. We're still friends. But the marriage couldn't withstand it. You know, it's really important for me to evolve spiritually and to evolve and grow. And she was a wonderful woman, but that she didn't have that same desire. Right? She just didn't have that same desire. But I'm very protective of my recovery. Nothing comes between me and my recovery for one simple reason. When I start smoking crack, eventually all of you, if you're in my life, you can just walk out. Eventually. I can't run away from me. I can't outrun my own shadow. I'm the one that has to live with what gets devastated when I smoke crack, and I'm not willing to do that. That's protection. The other is ecstasy. Invite ecstasy into your life. You can do that through the 11th step. You can discover the sublime. You know, I'm trying to... My main goal and objective this weekend was to excite some people in this room about the possibilities in recovery. And you can seek the sublime. But you got to have teachers to do that. And that requires, in my opinion, you go outside of the 12 steps. But you never do anything instead of the steps. You do it along with the steps. Again, it excites. It makes recovery fun. It makes spiritual living fun. The next is a concept called remembrance. We call it, you know, another word for remembrance is gotshot. So I'm continuously in conversations with a handful of people in my life where we're talking about this idea of remembering where we came from, our divinity. Remembering our divinity. What draws my awareness to my divinity as I walk through my week? And then there's contemplation. This is a spiritual program of action. I'm going to give you some news. You need to contemplate some spiritual matters. Spirituality has to be contemplated. Ideas about God have to be contemplated. Ideas about what it means to be human have to be contemplated. Contemplation is an important part of it. When what might be the most important is this idea of self-examination. Am I reflecting on my conduct? Remember in the third step, my life is not my business anymore. Who's in it, where I work, how much money, what I'm doing, not my business. What is my business is my conduct and how I'm being moved through all those experiences. Reflection, self-examination. Self-examination kicks you into self-recognition. Once you recognize you're falling short somewhere, do you become accountable with an honest desire to change your behavior? Self-recognition. Recognizing where you're falling short and moving into an accountability with, this is the important part, not just telling on yourself, having an actual desire to change the behavior. And then the last two are bonding. which
I forgot we were supposed to do that thing at the very beginning. We
got it. You got it? Okay. So bonding. Bonding's extremely important, and bonding happens two ways. You got to have a magical combination of people you can go kick it with on a Friday night that are trying to walk a spiritual path, but you don't talk about spirituality. Right? That's one aspect of it. The another aspect, and I think more important, is having a group of men and women around you that you can talk and compare notes about what it means to you. Like, everyone lives a spiritual life in a particular way. Like Brandon said, there are, I don't know what, 80, 90 people in here? There are 80, 90 different conceptions of God and perspectives about God. That means there's 80 or 90 different gods in here. That's what we're dealing with. Nobody's right and nobody's wrong. But who do you kick it with and talk about and compare notes so you can have dialogue about these issues, which sort of puts the entire eight things together because you're going to be contemplating at the same time. You're going to be doing self-examination. You're going to be protecting your recovery. And the last is guidance. Someone's got to come before you and show you what to do. It's an important part of this. That's why we have sponsors, but there can be guides in other arenas in your life. So guidance is a mandatory part of this. You know, somebody had to show me how to cook a fucking eight ball. Right? Somebody had to show me where where I wanted to go when I got downtown to Bankhead or Fulton Industrial or North Avenue. I had to find out where I wanted to go get the good dope from, right? I was easily guided in that. Find your guides. Find your spiritual guides. And, you know, those eight things have changed the trajectory of my recovery. And then the story.
Can you repeat it real quick?
Sure. Protection, ecstasy, contemplation, remembrance, self-examination, self-recognition, bonding, and guidance. So Brandon said it last night, the hardest thing about trusting God is trusting God. So in 2015, mm-hmm. I went into my employer and I asked for a raise. And they turned me down and I copped the resentment. And a few months later, I started putting together a business plan because I wanted to open my own recovery center. And I shopped it to a guy in Denver, then I shopped it to a guy in Atlanta. And this guy in Atlanta said, I'll do it with you. And so we signed this letter of intent. And I knew I was going to resign my job at the end of the year, and I began to live the double life. Because I would go to these quarterly meetings, they'd put stuff on the projector, and it would show me getting like a promotion and becoming a district manager. And they're making all these decisions based on me staying with the company, and I know I'm not staying with the company. And it started to work on me. And I went to my spiritual teacher, and I asked him about it, and he said, don't worry, you'll be compelled to be honest one day. You won't have any choice in the matter. The way you live your life, it'll come. You'll just be driven to be honest. And in August, I'm sitting in my VP's office, and he asked me, he's like, what's going on? And I saw the internal struggle, because I had a fear that they would force me out of the company so they could replace me. And my wife and I just bought this house and a massive mortgage, you know, new car, all this stuff. And so I was worried, and I was fearful. And then I saw it coming out of me. I was like, I can't believe I'm about to tell him that I'm resigning at the end of the year. And I went and told him, and he was very understanding. But as I walked out of his office, he said, hey, before you make your decision to leave, how much money is it going to take to keep you here? I was a little frustrated because to me, the voice goes, well, if you said this in February, we wouldn't even be sitting here. But evidently, that's not what was supposed to happen in February. But I ignored him because I was already moving towards this vision I had created. And so then right before, it was the end of September, he walks into my office. He goes, look, I'm going to the quarterly executive meetings up in Missouri. I want you to go this weekend, create your dream job description with this company and how much money you want to make. And I said, okay. So I spent the weekend doing that. And I put well over six figures, you know, 125 base. That's what I wanted my base to be, plus commissions. All right. I asked for the promotion. I asked for the responsibilities. And I'll be damned, he comes back from Missouri and they give it to me. All right, so now I've got this letter of intent I signed on one side. I've got this recovery center on the other side. And I go into prayer and meditation like I'm taught. All right, It's funny. I think everyone that I asked for guidance, all they told me was to go into prayer and meditation.
Right? Jerks.
And so the prayer at the beginning was clarity. God, please provide me with clarity about what I'm supposed to do. And nothing was happening. So my teachers, you know, Scott, who's been one of my greatest influences, one of the best things he ever taught me, when you're not sure what to do, don't do anything. If you're not clear, don't do anything. And so a few days later, I can't remember the time, I changed the prayer. And I had a meditation room in my house. I was in my meditation room one morning, and I said the prayer, and I said, God, will you please make it obvious to me? Make it obvious. And that's a really dangerous prayer. Be ready, because if you ask God to make it obvious, that means he's got to take a lot of shit away to make it obvious. And so I said the prayer, and that morning, like literally, I walked out of the meditation room. My daughter at the time was in this phase where she was drawing a lot of things, and she was leaving them around the house. And I go down to the living room, and on the coffee table, her and my wife have already gone for the day, there's this drawing. It's framed on my desk in my office at home. It's like this little box, red box, and inside the box it says, follow your dream, and there's some stars around it. And I saw that right after I said the prayer. And my dream was the recovery center. And when she got home from school, I asked her why she drew it. And she goes, I don't know. I was supposed to draw that. And I made my decision based on that experience.
That's crazy, Tara. Crazy talk.
That's the power of this process. That's how. That's why they say trusting God, the hardest thing about it is trusting God. That's why they call it a leap of faith. All right? So I share that story with you just because I want this to be real life stuff, all right? We always focus on, God, please keep me sober today. Or, you know, early recovery, the prayers are very focused. This can happen in any arena in your life, all right? So that's the 10th step, and that's a part of the 11th step, and I turn it over to Brandon.
Thanks,
mm-hmm.
Sir.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When you followed your dream and you decided not to do the job, did you receive any more pushbacks or barricades or hurdles that you had to get over?
Not really.
Well, I'll answer that.
He knows my life as well as I do. Maybe
I'll answer that in a minute. But before we do that, so the 10th step's about connection, right? Connection with others. So we've done it a couple times. I want to do it again. I want everybody to stand up, go find two people they don't know, introduce yourself, and give them a hug.
Yeah.
Let's settle back down.
Corral, corral, corral.
Diddly diddly. Or whatever.
I didn't say introduce yourself to people and go get snacks. Come on, let's go. All right, guys. So now we're back, right? We got to experience some other people. I'm going to read this one. This one's called Clarity. Can you see a sound? Can you hear light? Can you unite your senses? Can you turn inward? What we are all seeking is clarity. Forget about religious rationalizations. Forget about elaborate explanations. What we all want is clarity. What we abhor is ignorance. Ignorance confuses us, brings us misfortune and sorrow, and makes us miserable. If we have clarity, then we can live with equanimity. It is a misconception that spirituality brings everlasting happiness. There is no such thing. Sadness still comes to the wise. But unlike most people, their clarity of mind allows them to see beyond the temporal emotionalism of the moment. They are far-seeing, and so happiness and sorrow become the same to them. True clarity is more than just being smart, more than just being wise. Clarity manifests from meditation. It comes when you can unite all faculties of the mind and unify them into a magnificent light of perception. It is hard to talk of this in anything but mystical terms. Our language is unfamiliar with the frontiers of the spirit because few have ever seen those limits, let alone describe them. But let's try. If you unite sound with vision, then you will create light. That light is the concentrated force of the mind. It is by that brightness that truth is revealed. I know that a lot of you think that a lot of the stuff that, well, I can only speak for myself, that I've been speaking of is like some sort of mystical bullshit that you don't get. I get that. That's cool. But that's what the depths of the 10th and the 11th steps brings into your life. Whatever God is changes for me constantly because I find something else. Now, I feel compelled to bring these things up because they're interesting to me, and I like to look at the paradox of the existence that we live in. So in the foreword of the second edition, it says, by late 1937, the number of members having substantial sobriety time behind them was sufficient to convince the membership that a new light had entered the dark world of the alcoholic. So by late 1937 equates to about 2.5 years of sobriety. Okay? Fascinating, really. Then I've got this other book that says that if a woman with breast cancer, for example, detects a tumor while it is still very small, localized the chance of her curing her cancer, that is. A cure means surviving at least 3 years without reoccurrence of the disease, are currently better than 90%. So substantial sobriety time is 2.5 years, and in the medical term, when we're referring to cancer, being cured is around 3. How powerful is your God? Is it possible? Is it possible that you don't ever have to think or experience that state of being drunk or high ever again? There's a lot of people in this room that believe that that's not possible. The 10th step promises tell us a position of neutrality exists. It's conditional, though. I have to continue to do these things. Now, one of the very first things that I said when I got here was I explained to you on Friday a 10th step that I was getting, that I was in the middle of. We'll just call it a resentment that I copped against my wife because she didn't throw the parade when I came home. And I stewed in that for 30, 45 minutes until I remembered that I need to ask God to remove that from me. Instantly gone. I show up here. I discussed it with Tarek. Like, by the time I got home Friday night, it was so laughable. How quickly do you guys dispose of your problems? Or do you like to kind of diarrhea in the bed a little bit? Kind of roll around in it. Gets in your hair and stuff. Yeah, it's pretty gross. That's what we do with our problems, though, isn't it? But it's my shit. I want to keep my shit. You do that, but it stinks. And everybody else sees it and smells it. So receiving a 10th step call is extremely important. And most people never talk about it. Most people have never fathomed what that means. I had a wonderful 10th step call on Friday from a guy. Now, he's in a particular relationship. based on every bit of information he's given me, I would say that she's crazy. Okay? What she was asking him to do, I completely thought was insane. Not my job. He's calling me to get free of his problem. So I've got to constantly be listening to turn him back into himself. What have you done to create this? What is the underlying thing that gives you the resistance to doing what she's asking you to do? Yes, I think it's silly. Whatever. Doesn't matter. What in you is disturbed right now? We talked about it, pointed out some things from his history that I knew about. And he realized this has nothing to do with her. I was like, what is it going to harm you to do what she's asking you to do? It's like, nothing. I'm like, so do you want to be in the relationship or not? He says, right now I do. And I'm like, well, then get over yourself and do what she's asking. This stubbornness that he was walking around with of, I'm not going to do it because that sounds silly. You know the number of silly things that we did to get drunk and high? Yeah, just think about them. Things that there's no way we would do that with our rational mind, but we did it. But yeah, we get sober, clean, and like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to call somebody and tell on myself. Fuck that. Big tough guy. Do it. It's fascinating. So, the 10 steps where I interact with you. The 9th step's where I get free of the way that I used to think so that I can experience you for what you are. We act as though we had life of our own, as separate minds, as though we could have plans and purposes and interests separate from the universe. All this, if it were true, would mean that that existence is not one of harmonious, one in harmonious, but one of chaos, of competition and strife. You must forgive everyone who has ever hurt you if you want to be forgiven yourself. That is the long and the short of it. You have to get rid of all resentments and condemnation of others, and not least of self-condemnation and remorse. If your prayers are not being answered, search your consciousness and see if there is not someone whom you have yet to forgive. Ooh. Now this stuff, that's an interesting twist. I start making amends. I start writing inventory. And I start to get some shit. Okay, different motivation level, right? Yeah. I'm selfish anyways. So who in here works with prayer? Okay. Who in here works with meditation? Who in here works with prayer, meditation, and vision? Wow, that's probably the most we've ever had. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about, vision? Love asking this question. This may be my favorite question. What if...
Oh, God. Here we go.
All of your thoughts were actually prayers. Contemplate that for a minute.
You have some messed up prayers.
Yeah. That's what the first place we did a workshop, and I said that. There was some guy that goes, man, those would be some fucked up prayers. Yeah, exactly what I was thinking. Yes, they would. Would you endeavor to clean up your thoughts if they were actually prayers? See, I work with the idea that all my thoughts are prayers. All my thoughts create the vision of my life. The moment that I'm in right now, I can do very little to change. The moment I'm in, this is Brandon's belief, the moment I'm in right now is the vision that I've created in all of my past. So really all I get to work with is from today time. How do I endeavor to change that? How do I spend my time planning my day, focusing my life, focusing on the things that I want, vision? Big Book talks about it. We create an ideal in the fourth step. And then in the tenth step, every day is the day when we must carry a vision of God's will into all our activities. Now this is where it really kind of gets interesting. I like to, as you, if you've been here all weekend, you know that I like to connect different things, right? So in the third step, we give our will over to the care of this power that we say this prayer and say, I'm going to give you the power, even though you have all the power in the universe. But I'm going to do this prayer. And then in the tenth step, we get this great little sentence that says, we can exercise our willpower along this line, all we wish, it is the proper use of the will. So if I've done a thorough 4 through 9, I actually get access to this power in a way that I didn't know was possible. And let's just say that we believe in the doctor's opinion when it says that we get to recreate our lives. And we get to create a vision for our life. That means that I get a say in how my life turns out. Interesting yet? What if in the prayers I request, in the meditation, I get the intuitive thought, which then takes me to the right answer? I was at Publix today, and I had an intuitive thought that I thank God for. I had to go get some buttermilk because we're making some fried chicken when I get home tonight. And I had to go get some butter, and I'm walking by. An intuitive thought says, when you opened the fridge earlier, there was very little milk in there. Thank you. What is that? Most people think that's just a crazy thought. It's an intuitive thought if you're really hooked up with whatever the universe is. Go here, turn there, do this, end up there. See, the problem is, in early sobriety, I had no ability to access whatever that is because the chatter of 1,000 monkeys was going on in my head, and I couldn't understand. Through meditation, my thoughts separate, and I experience them in individual pieces. They line up, for some reason, out the right side of my head. And they kind of have the... For me, it's like a little file folder that there's like a spinny little icon in. Okay? How I experience it. And they line up, sometimes 4 or 5 deep, and I play in each one of them as I'm talking to you. I'm doing it right now. That sounds magical, doesn't it? And I do this regularly, and it's... And people that know me, they can tell when I'm with them, but there's something else going on, because when we're talking, they're going, what's going on? I'm listening right now to you and to a lot of things. I'll engage in this conversation over there with a thought. I'll engage in that conversation with a thought. I'll be in the middle of a conversation, and I will observe that Chris's daughter is doing something with the left side of her head. Enough for me to say to Kelsey, I think something's going on with Ava's ear. She goes, you know, it is. She's had ear infections. I'm like, okay, I saw that. What the fuck is that? What that is it's a dad that's had 2 kids that has known what ear infections look like. Intuitive thought. Makes me look to somebody that hasn't had kids and experienced that like I got some sort of magical power. I just know where to access it. I just know what to pay attention to. So we've got this evening review that's part of the 11th step that most people don't do because they don't see value in it. Cool. You won't do it until you see value in it. And then once you see value in it, then you'll do it. It's at the top of page 86, and it's got these questions that we go through. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest? Or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves that should be discussed with someone at once? Were we kind? Were we loving? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? You betcha. Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, what we could pack in the stream of life? So I go through that, but I change it up a little bit. When it gets to, or were we thinking of what we could do for others, I try to list as many things out there that I can that I've done for somebody that I didn't expect anything in return. I don't recall a single time where I didn't say that I was not thinking about myself most of the day. It's where it is. You know, it's this crazy thing where the only place that I receive all of my senses is in my head. So the vantage point of my idea of reality comes from right here. It's very difficult for me not to think that this is everything. I realize that you're looking at me and you've got your own reality thinking that that's everything too. Because we don't have the ability to go sit in somebody else's bed. So naturally, it makes us selfish just by the way that we're designed. We can't fathom the other perspective until I start doing some outside stuff that the 11th step tells us to do, where I start looking at things from different perspectives. I learn techniques and practices of how to get outside of myself to view myself in a different light. When I can do that, the amount of things that I see are fascinating. When I act like the fly on the wall, sitting there observing the argument between Brandon in position A and whoever's in position B, and I'm in position C on the wall looking at it, I see all sorts of different stuff. But who wants to do that? I do it because my life depends on it. Can't tell you how many times I've had the conversation where I'm bitchy, whiny, moany to Tarek. Why do I always have to be the one that's the cause of all my problems? The answer is the same. Because you're the only one that gets drunk if you don't take responsibility for your life. The other person doesn't. All right. So I'm willing to consider it. And then I go through this, and I go through the morning discipline on awakening. Let us think about our 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Which must mean that I actually have plans for the day if I'm going to consider them. My life is set up in a way that I have to schedule my day. I have to. If I don't schedule my day, I can't get it all in. When I'm on the road, you can call me, and I can tell you precisely how ahead or behind I am. I'm an hour ahead. I'm 2 hours ahead. I'm an hour behind. Tarek called me the other day at 8:30, and I told him I was 3 hours ahead. Already. 3 hours ahead at 8:30. The next day, I was 3 hours behind, and I ended up having to extend my road trip by an entire day just because of that. But if I don't have a plan, I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what I'm doing. If you want to go to Seattle, are you in Seattle? What do you have to do?
Drive.
Plan.
Get in the car.
Traveling.
Get in the car and you're there?
No.
You gotta start from here. Make a plan.
Okay.
Math.
Make a plan, but what does that mean?
Directions.
By gas, by...
Okay.
Prepare.
Call Uber.
Get a map, do something like that. Are you there? You got a map? I want to go to Seattle. I got a map. Am I in Seattle?
No.
Take action.
You got to do some shit, right? You don't just stand up there. Okay, do you know, and this is the answer to your question that you asked of him, do you know that the minute that you set a goal, an obstacle is created?
Wow.
I want to walk out that door. I have to do some shit. An obstacle of, I'm not on my feet yet, I must stand.
Yeah,
an obstacle of, I have to push my chair back. An obstacle of, I have to walk around this table and go around that. But you know what most people in early sobriety think success looks like? Start, I'm there. What the fuck is that? When does that ever happen? I want to be sober. It's not enough. I have to do some stuff. I create obstacles just by setting the goal of I want to be sober. Some of those obstacles are difficult. If you really want it, will you overcome them? If you really wanted to get drunk or high, did you overcome any obstacle in your way? Including your morals and what you felt about yourself? Including anybody that you loved in your life? We get sober and we want to just, want to be sober. What's happened? Nothing. Meditation's hard, guys. Been doing it for 6.5 years, and there's some times where I get in that in my head and it gets junky and messy, and you'll hear it later on, greasy. Gets all greasy in there, right? Lindsay loves to talk about grease. But you know what? I do it. And I change it. And I start with 2 minutes, and I go to 3 minutes, and then I go to 4, and then I go to 5, then I go to 7, then I go to 10, then I go to 12, then I go to 15, and by the time I'm up there, I might as well make it an hour. It doesn't matter. But I do it. The universe rewards you for just trying. You can do it incredibly wrong, but you're doing something. Anybody familiar with the law of attraction?
Yeah.
Who's a good speller in here? Okay, so if I take the ATTR off of attraction, what do I have?
Attraction.
Oh. Nothing comes to me unless I do something. Huh. You think meditation is important? Why do you think they use so many pages in the book to talk about it? Could they have talked about something else on these pages? Probably. But they didn't. You go to an 11-step meeting, they're going to talk about prayer. Put my shoes underneath the bed so I have to hit my knees before I start my day. God, if you got a simple practice like that, I admire you. Because my prayers are junky, and they're in the car, and they're like, motherfucker, why are these people in my way? Can you please help me? Get in the left lane. Oh, okay. That's a prayer. Doesn't sound like it. It's not very reverent. Didn't put myself in the right space, but it's a prayer. Intuitive thought returns. This, guys, these two steps are so fun. I hope I'm communicating to you how fun they are for me. And I haven't even come close to touching what I usually talk about, but because it's fun, I'll do it. So, I will leave you with this ponderance. Every man is where he is by the law of his being. The thoughts which he has built into his character have brought him there. And in the arrangement of his life, there is no element of chance, but all is the result of the law which cannot err. Man is buffered by circumstance so long as he believes himself to be a creature of outside conditions. But when he realizes that he is a creative power, and that he may command the hidden soil and seeds of his being, out of which circumstances grow, he then becomes to be the rightful master of himself. Circumstance does not make a man, it reveals it to himself. Men do not attract that which they want. They attract that which they are. If you're not getting enough out of life, if you're not getting enough out of sobriety, it's your fault. You have brought into your existence the precise experience that you have requested. Would you change it if you could? 10 and 11 are the access to it. Take a break.
Thanks, Brent. Yeah, so great.
Yeah. Let's come back at 10 after. 10 after.